And all the research points to the fact that net zero is only going to happen if government, if business, and if people all take part. It's got to be a shared endeavour. So the penny really hasn't dropped on net zero yet at all.
That was Ed Roddis from Deloitte talking about the annual State of the State report with some serious warnings on budgets and government targets. That's the focus of today's featured interview on the day Chancellor Jeremy Hunt was setting his pre-election UK budget plan. Deloitte's report, which has been running since 2012, looks much more closely at what the decisions in Westminster and Holyrood mean on the ground. It's all fine for Liz Truss to knacker the economy or Jeremy Hunt to cut taxes, but those decisions flow from there and create problems elsewhere. In Scotland, the SNP government makes its own choices on spending, and it's left councils reeling at trying to plug gaps while dealing with a tax freeze. The State of the State is based on interviews with dozens of senior civil servants in councils and other parts of public life. This year, two things stick out. One, councils are in dire straits and fear heading the way of Birmingham, where a 21% council tax rise was just agreed, along with painful £300 million cuts. And two, the long-term problems of decisions today. That's focusing on net zero, the phrase which describes lowering emissions while changing the way we consume energy and rely on fossil fuels. I spoke to Leslie Smiley of Deloitte's Government and Public Services Department and Head of Public Sector Research, Ed Roddis, before the budget was set in the Commons on the 6th of March. I started by asking Leslie if Scottish councils should be braced for heading the way of bankrupt Birmingham.
Some of that in terms of the council dynamic has been absolutely fascinating and hearing some very different views than what we've heard in the past. So, you know, very sobering, very candid views, I would say, this year versus what we have heard in the past. As part of our State of the State conversations, we've had conversations with some of the CFOs across local government, and you know, Birmingham is not far away. So what I think is deemed south of the border in terms of almost a bankruptcy situation, I think there's a realism up here that although the statutory and the legislative side is different and we can't go down that route, there are real implications in terms of similarities between Scotland and England and what could happen from a local government perspective. This has been some of the first time in my career that I've heard CFOs and chief executives across local government really talking about the fragility of their services, talking about services being at real crisis points. Speaking to the CFO within Glasgow, I know some of their priorities are into the bins and libraries dynamics. But then it becomes a choice and some very difficult, tough choices as to where that spend goes. Time and time again, I think there's been challenges as well into the council tax dimension this year, given the political dimension. And council tax councils are having to look at that, you know, hard in terms of them, how they spend their budget and how they ultimately balance their budget as well. They will then have to just really, you know, push some of the priorities and different priorities that they may have.
Okay, I want to bring in the head of public research here as well, Ed. You must see an overarching theme on this. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that this is not restricted to one council in Scotland. It's not restricted to one agency or any kind of public sector arm in this country. There's no money there.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the case with local government in particular, that has been hit hard by a number of cumulative crises over the years. I mean, there was austerity, which was arguably slightly softer in Scotland than it was south of the border. After austerity, councils were hit by COVID and everything they had to do in that realm. And then the cost of living crisis. And then with each of those came a whole load of after effects and aftershocks, whether it's heightened demand for services or the inflationary impact on spending power for councils. So it has created a perfect storm for councils and for other public services in Scotland. But I think as well as the money, Andy, there's a couple of other dimensions here. There's a couple of other parts of the equation to think about. One is the demand on council services, the amount of stuff they have to do for the money that they've got. And the other part of it is, well, what could be done differently? What kind of reform options could government and Scottish government be looking at, whether it's a reduction in the number of councils, whether it's a different makeup of services? There's obviously been talk of the national a national care system, in which case you would take a massive amount of what councils have to do out of the equation. And potentially there's some really interesting reform possibilities in that, where councils become more place shaping bodies for the areas that they look after. So I think, as well as the money, you can't necessarily think of the money in isolation. You have to kind of think about, well, what councils have to do with that, the pressures they're under, and then the alternatives, the other ways of working.
How do public attitudes match with the reality that you're hearing from the people who have to run the services? Scotland appears to want Scandinavian public services, but we often go for American-style taxes. Is there a mismatch?
Yeah, of course there is. And Scotland's not unique in that at all. people do want great services and pay as little tax as possible. I mean, I think maybe that there's a greater sense of realism in Scotland as well. I mean, and we do see consistently in all of the years that we've done the State of the State survey, the Scottish public are more inclined to say, we will take higher public spending and we will pay higher taxes for the privilege. Now, clearly, people don't want something for nothing. They don't want to give away their hard-earned money for nothing. So there is an implication, I think, that there would be better quality public services for that spend. Yeah, Scotland does stick out in that.
Leslie, is that the kind of thing that you're hearing as well? How does that affect individual public services and the attitudes that we have towards them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do think conversations that we're having across our client base within Scotland at the moment is definitely shifting into, how do we reduce the demand? How do we move to more preventative type measures? How do we equally change the expectations of the public and the citizen so that there is less demand on public services? Now, that is hard. That is the hard thing in terms of what we've become known to expect and want and desire and all of these things with an aging population and wider. But there's definitely something that needs to be looked at in terms of reducing that demand.
What you mentioned earlier that there's a long trend of these state of the state sort of snapshots now. COVID, austerity, you know, we've seen it all in such a short time. Are people more weary now? I was struck by one of the findings as a bit of a chart, which suggests we're quite a pessimistic nation. When you're asked how things are going to get better in the future, things are going to get better is a really small part of the chart. How do political leaders demonstrate that things can be better? Can things be better, or are we managing decline now?
I think I'll maybe jump in on that first, and Ed, I know you'll evolve on it. I think it's been really interesting doing the surveys and the interviews this year. It has felt different. Leaders have felt more pessimistic. I do think there's a couple of quotes in the report. Civil servants are broken. They're broken, but they're used to being broken. And there's almost an expectation of carrying on in order to deliver public services. But equally, I think through various conversations with public sector leaders, people are passionate about what they do. People are passionate about delivering continued fabulous service across Scotland and what they continue to do within that. And so there is a degree of optimism. I'm not sure where it comes from all the time, but there is something in terms of that enthusiasm and that opportunity. I know Ed will likely come on to this, but he did ask as part of the leader survey, you know, describe in three words the state of the state. And some of the positive words and you know, greater phrasing that's coming from that is hopeful, opportunity. And I think we've got to, you know, hold on to that. We've been at rock bottom. There has been the fragility. Many could argue you are at that crisis point. But actually, is that a good thing? You know, is that going to make that systemic change come through in terms of change in public services now that we definitely need across Scotland?
Is that right, Ed? I mean, you've got to hit the bottom before you can build back up.
I don't know if you've got to hit the bottom, but I mean, a burning platform, as you often see for any institution, including government, can certainly sharpen the senses. But I think what's happened over the years that I've noticed of doing this report this year and last year, there's been a real sense that public sector leaders want to see some radical change. They want to see some systemic reform. They want to see some really visionary thinking about the future of how government and public services operate, because they know there is less money, there's less money, less money. There's more demand, more demand. People are getting older. The demographics are changing. The challenges are more severe. So I think people are really up for some really striking change in the way bits of the public sector work.
One of the things I wanted to focus on in your report is net zero, because this encapsulates one of the problems to do with the big problem of our age, which is climate change, and how countries all over the world deal with it and take people along with them. Now, looking at your report, it suggests there is a big mismatch between public acceptance of big changes and what people might be willing to do or pay for in order to meet political goals. Ed, what do you think? Is there any way of reconciling these two sides of the coin?
I think they'll have to be eventually, but the penny on net zero hasn't dropped for the public yet in Scotland or across the UK. So we asked in our survey, how confident are you that the UK will meet its net zero target and the Scottish government will meet its net zero target? And broadly, 7 in 10 of the public are not confident that we will meet these net zero targets, even though they're, you know, two and a half decades away. So people don't even dare to dream, even if it's that far in the distance. And we also asked a series of questions to try and drill down into people's understanding of net zero and the impact it might have on their lives. And we subsequently concluded people think they'll probably have to recycle a bit more. People say, oh, you know, I'll repair and reuse things a bit more. It's kind of good for the circular economy, that kind of stuff. But when it came to more significant lifestyle changes, whether it's flying less, driving less, or things that cost money like buying an electric car, not many people expect to be doing those things anytime soon. And all the research points to the fact that net zero is only going to happen if government, if business, and if people all take part. It's got to be a shared endeavour. So the penny really hasn't dropped on net zero yet at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you've just said, Ed. I think, you know, many of our clients, it's pushed to the back. In terms of priority, it's going down there. It's talked about a lot, but I don't think enough have a strategy in terms of how they're going to deliver against net zero ambitions and targets. You know, the lifestyle one that you talked about, I find that astonishing, to be honest, that, you know, we think that through recycling, we can make some of those substantial changes. There have been a lot of conversations that I have had with clients around, you know, how we emulate some of those conversations, how we raise the eminence in terms of net zero, and a lot of conversation around joining up across services to ensure that we're really raising that national campaign around net zero to ensure that we actually are working towards some of those targets. I think there's a general feel that the targets are possibly missed in Scotland, and therefore we may have to look at some of the longer term, more sustainable targets versus some of the short termism that has been considered at the moment.
I think we've done what seems to happen in politics all the time here. We've ended up talking about something enormous and we've ended up talking about bins, which I think is the main takeaway for me for politicians. Ed, yeah, you wanted to jump in there.
Can I just throw something in here on this about net zero? I think we're moving, not just Scotland, but the rest of the world is moving from a period of rhetoric about climate change and net zero into a period where a lot of action is going to have to start taking place. And what's happening is net zero plans are basically buffeting up against reality, and governments are starting to feel the first bumps in the road. You saw it down in the UK when the Prime Minister reset some of the targets around net zero. Actually, there wasn't a lot. There was some political punching around, but there wasn't a lot of pushback on that, because what he was doing, he was saying the goal remains the same, but the way we get there needs to change. And you've seen that not just in the UK, you've seen it in France, seen it in Sweden as well. So I think government is feeling the first bumps on the road to net zero.
Well, who was it that said famously, you know, we need to cut the green crap? Meanwhile, you know, the Scottish government is in a coalition with the Green Party here. It feels to me, maybe you agree, that there's a hardening of polarizing on this subject now as well, which is going to make it very difficult for a whole country to go forward in one direction. But let's not be too pessimistic. I wonder if I could put you on the spot a little bit here. both of you. Looking at your report, I wonder if you could in turn sort of suggest where you think the biggest problem is. Where's the huge alarm bell ringing in your ears from this report? But then something that maybe suggests that there's something we can hold on to, that public policy, public money, and public opinion can find something positive out of all of this work. Leslie, I wonder if you can start with, where did the alarm bell ring for you?
Can I say right through the report? I think there are alarm bells this year, and there definitely are in terms of budgets, doing more with less, all of that kind of cliched type view. I think some of the alarm bells, you know, some of the more standard ones you could see into the health space and hearing, you know, continued views around waiting lists and that kind of thing. But more for me, it's around the workforce and some of the skills and people dynamic, hearing how broken and challenged people are, and that is genuinely hitting the coalface at the front line. You know, you hear a lot of the news, headlines in the news every day, but actually these people trying to deliver the best possible services on a daily basis with very little budget and very little, you know, wider encouragement, that is hard. So that's probably where one of the biggest kind of crisis or alarm bells elements it would be for me. I also think there is a massive positive coming from a lot of this. And you know, we laughed saying that there's loads of doom and gloom through the state report because of the challenges in budgets and waiting times and so on this year. But there's a huge amount of positive in terms of, let's look at the system. Let's look at major change. Let's look at some of the radical elements around systemic change of public sector reform, and let's do things differently. We've got a fabulous public service out there, but let's not continue to look at the low-hanging fruit or sticky plaster along. Let's look at it in its totality and the strategic element to give us the best possible public service we can again. So loads of positives there taken from some of the doom and gloom and some of those wider stats.
Am I allowed two negatives and two positives, Andy? Is that okay? So I think the two things that really stuck out for me as real concerns are social care and the state of social care, because lots of people talk about the NHS. They talk about NHS waiting lists because it's all so visible and so reported on. When it comes to the NHS, there's hospitals, you see them, there's ambulances, you see them. Social care is part of the same problem, and there are some heartbreaking things happening across social care that don't get reported. They're not as visible because there are people still on waiting lists, but they're in their own homes, they're waiting for care packages and so on. So the state of social care across the UK really worries me, including in Scotland. The other kind of flashpoint, I think, is what's happening to public trust and sentiment about the efficacy of government to make a difference. So you mentioned that those pessimism stats, Andy, and just to see that the public pessimistic, that the things they really care about, they don't necessarily think are going to improve in the years to come. I think that should worry government, because that kind of speaks volumes about the public losing faith in the state's ability to make a difference to their lives. Then moving on to the positives, Leslie's already said it. There's massive opportunities to improve the system here. If you get the public sector really joining up across services, really thinking in terms of being more productive, really thinking in terms of preventative measures as well, what can they do to prevent problems hitting them down the line? That could be a real game changer. And as well, if you look at the conclusion of our report, lots of people that we interviewed in Scotland talked about Scotland's strengths and what needs to happen to leverage those strengths by connecting business and government, really looking at things like the workforce and higher education and Scotland's soft power as well, really leveraging those strengths. There is real opportunity
there. I think if I maybe just come in on the end of that very briefly, I think it's about joining up. I think there is no one part of public services that is, you know, in a brilliant position to put it that way. I think it is about public services working together to deliver the best possible system that we can do in Scotland, and that is going to involve organisations and services coming together.
That was our featured interview with Deloitte's Leslie Smiley and Ed Roddis on their State of the State report. Thanks also to producers Gemma Bibby and Caroline White. We'll be back next week for another Stooshie. Until then, pick up a paper or read our regional and national political coverage online at the Press and Journal, the Courier, and the Sunday Post, so you can be better briefed.